Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mona Montgomery with this evening's edition of The Hola Hoax. You knew by now there were no gas chambers in Germany. You know by now that Hitler did not have an extermination campaign to get rid of the Jews. He just wanted to get them out of Germany and even worked to giving them their long, yearned-for homeland state, first in Madagascar, and then to the south of Russia. But the Jews were not satisfied with that. They had to have Israel. And so they conspired with the communists to destroy Hitler's courageous stand against communism, to utterly defeat him. And of course, 6 million did not die. The only people that died in Hitler's humane detention camps were people who died of natural causes, mostly of typhoid fever, because there was so much lice brought in from the east of Europe, but also due to Allied bombing in the last 2 years of the war. Many, many prisoners died of starvation, and it is stacks of bodies that you've seen in propaganda films and photographs of these starved, emaciated corpses, 400 and 500 high, that people often point to prove that there were gas chambers. But of course, only a cursory review of logic proves that there is no connection between starved bodies and gas chambers. And the propaganda goes on and on. Today we are engaged in yet another world war to satisfy the desires of the Jew. World War II was fought to create Israel. World War III is being fought to increase Israel and to turn over to the Jews greater Israel. All of the land from the Nile to the Euphrates. All of the land from Egypt to Iraq. Who is perpetrating this war? The American people? Certainly not. The American government? Well, maybe, but only the rogue elements that have taken over our good nation. The representative to the United Nations for Iraq put it exactly right. Iraq has been attacked by the American-Israeli mafia, and the lies continue. Americans were lied to by their government when they were told that this war was going to be a cakewalk. We were told that the Iraqis would welcome our soldiers with open arms, lay down their rifles, and turn against their leader, Saddam Hussein. Instead, we are meeting a fierce resistance from the Iraqis. And the surrounding Muslim nations are supporting Iraq as well. These surrounding Arab nations report the news from the front lines entirely differently than does our Jew-controlled press. For example, you all heard of the story of the truckload of people who crashed through the checkpoint in Iraq and were shot down. This truck contained 15 members of one family, and all were killed. The story we were given in our press is that this truck broke through the checkpoint, refusing to stop, which forced our American soldiers to shoot the truck and kill all the people. We were told that U.S. troops opened fire as a last resort after the civilian vehicle failed to stop at a military post despite repeated warning shots fired by U.S. troops. But an investigation has revealed that a radio was left on, which revealed the following words being spoken by U.S. Army 3rd Division Captain Ronnie Johnson to his men after the shooting. Quote, "You just, expletive, killed a family because you didn't fire a warning shot soon enough," unquote. This is a far cry from the story we've been given, which is that this truck recklessly broke through the blockade. In fact, the truck had no choice. No warning shot was given to let it know it was required to stop. America continues to blame Saddam Hussein for all of the civilian deaths in Iraq. But it's clear to me that America never had any intention of letting Saddam Hussein surrender. This is clearly an attack like the attack on the Quraysh, where the end has already been determined by the mafia forces. Which are involved in a land grab, and that no amount of negotiation will stop this American-Israeli mafia from stealing Iraq in order to turn it over to Israel. Plans are already underway to divert oil from Iraq into Israel, and you can mark my words, they will steal the water next. In neighboring Jordan, there have been 100 demonstrations against the Americans. Men from Jordan are pouring into Iraq to lend their support to Saddam Hussein against the American infidel. Infidel means enemy to the human race. Meanwhile, Israel continues to thwart America's attempts to create a Palestinian state. In Amman, Jordan, a parish priest of the Greek Orthodox community in Ammon said that he fully supports the Church of the Nativity's decision to ban a number of top coalition leaders from entering the house of worship. This Bethlehem sanctuary is standing firm against allowing our American enemies of the human race from coming in to the church to worship, with the full support of the local priest. The priest of the Church of the Nativity says that Bush and his supporters have marred the teachings of Christ and therefore may be banned from entering the church. This priest says that Bush and his supporters' entry into the church would tarnish it, since their hands are covered in the blood of the innocent. This Greek Orthodox Catholic Church supports the Pope's position against this war, saying that Bush, Rumsfeld, Blair, and Straw are war criminals and children killers that will be banned from entering the Church of the Nativity forever. America's president is as good as excommunicated from the Catholic Church in Bethlehem. It's an important question to ask. The question is, why are we going to war with Iraq? And we've been told that they found a smoking gun that President Hussein was connected to Al-Qaeda 4 times now. 2 of those pieces of evidence have been proven to be plagiarized and forged. The 2 pieces of evidence that the United States gave to Congress and to the United Nations. First, they told the American people that they had this smoking gun evidence, but that we should wait and trust them to go ahead and mobilize without our being told what this evidence was. Finally, this sensitive evidence, which we were told was a threat to national security if it was revealed sooner, was revealed to the United Nations by Colin Powell, and it turned out to be a plagiarized student's essay written 8 years ago, which was public record. So it was not sensitive, it was not new, and it wasn't even from a real person who even had any understanding of the situation. It was done by a student. So there's one smoking gun that turned out to be falsified evidence. Then our Congress was told that there were several pieces of paper that proved that Saddam Hussein was trying to buy nuclear material from South Africa. And our Congress believed that, and they voted for the war based on that evidence, which later proved to be completely forged and falsified and plagiarized. Someone had taken outdated letterhead stationery from this government, and the government itself said this was not from them, and the government itself in South Africa proved this to be false evidence. These people, whoever stole this letterhead, wrote this information that Saddam Hussein was trying to buy nuclear material from this nation, and then signed it with a false name. A person forged another man's name in a childish scrawl. It was a cheap, lousy piece of forgery. And so here are two smoking guns that we've been presented with. Now we're told that they have uncovered a black book. Are we supposed to believe this evidence? Let's review the evidence that got us into the first Gulf War. If you'll recall, a witness went into Congress and testified that she had been working in the hospital, and she saw with her own eyes Iraqi troops coming into the hospital and hurling Kuwaiti babies to the floor to their death. Later, she admitted she made that up. President Bush, the elder President Bush himself, went into the United Nations with aerial photographs of the border of Iraq and Kuwait that showed troops amassing on the border. And this proved later to be false when the United Nations themselves went up, took aerial photographs, and found that there were no such troops. So how many false, forged, manufactured smoking guns are we expected to accept? All this shows is that we don't know what the reason is for the war. That we're being told one thing when another thing is true. Now, we've recently discovered that Israel is putting pressure on the United States to divert oil into Israel. There's an old oil line that goes back to the 50s that Israel is convincing America to reopen, which will give her the Iraqi oil. And we've been telling you that from day one. This war is about greater Israel. Israel wants to control the Middle East. Israel has been jealous of Saddam Hussein since at least the first Gulf War, because we wanted Saddam Hussein, a modern Western Muslim, to control the Middle East, and Israel wasn't going to allow it to happen. Israel wants to control what she calls greater Israel, all of the land from the Nile to the Euphrates, all of the land from Egypt to Iraq. We certainly do have a need to know why we're fighting this war. And personally, I'm content that we're fighting it for Israel. That's my belief. So victory will be achieved when we see the oil getting diverted to Israel and the water getting diverted to Israel. And that's already starting to happen. As I understand it, the Israelis have already prevailed on the Americans to open up an old oil line that dates back to the 50s, which will transport the oil into Israel. But the idea of a regime change or saving women is just something to show the public, because we're not willing to admit to the true goal here. It's up to intelligent people who are willing to put in the research and the work to figure out what is the secret meaning of this war. And then, by watching that prospect manifest in reality, we'll know for sure that that's what we were going for. I don't think there is such a thing as a war against terrorism. I think we're being taken for a ride. We're either fighting criminals or we're fighting states. And we have to be honest about what we're fighting. I used to believe in terrorists. I used to think that terrorists were criminals who sort of rose up spontaneously in an overcrowded, unfulfilling society that just sort of turned people into criminals who, simply because they weren't happy people, went around and blew up bridges. But I no longer believe that. I think that these people that we're defining as terrorists are actually combatants with a loyalty to a state. For example, Palestine. The most obvious example of terrorists that we've heard about for years is the Palestinian terrorists. But what's coming out on the internet, now that we're not exposed merely to the media, is that they've had their state taken over. They were driven out of the Israeli side of the partition plan in direct violation of the partition plan, 700,000 of them, through the use of torture and force, and pushed over into the Palestinian side of the partition plan. And then half of the Palestinian part of the partition plan was stolen from them, and they were pushed over onto the last half of the Palestine partition plan. And then the Israelis have been going around bulldozing their neighborhoods and building high-rises on the very last part of the Palestine side of the partition plan. I don't believe it's fair to call these people terrorists. These people are combatants. They are rightfully fighting for their own homes that's been taken over by Israel. It is on Israel, on whom we depend for our intelligence, so we haven't been told this. And what Osama bin Laden was doing was trying to draw the world's attention to this heinous violation of human rights, which we Americans kept turning our face from, to the extent of vetoing 31 resolutions that bore the signature of all of the signatories in the Security Council. And we said, no, we are not going to investigate Israel. We stand by Israel. We don't care what Israel does. So now we've got the whole Muslim world mad at us. That's 1.5 billion people. Now, do you honestly believe that we're going in to fight a madman, Saddam Hussein? Or do you think maybe we're fulfilling more of Israel's desires to create greater Israel, which goes from the Nile to the Euphrates and is in furtherance of Israel's obvious expansionism? Because if we are fighting this war to please Israel, we are going to have a jihad announced against us by 1.5 billion people. And that's just too many people to flip off. At this point, even if we do find chemical weapons, there's no credibility to them coming from Saddam Hussein. Once we engaged in an illegal war, we put ourselves in the position as the police breaking down the door of a citizen without a warrant. It's an illegal search and seizure. Now, that sounds okay if you trust your cop. Does anyone else want me to speak louder? Because it's possible that I need to adjust my mic. Let's see. Is that better? Okay. When your local cop breaks down your door and finds evidence that he can use against you, it's not admissible in a court of law, not only because he wasn't a good sport, but because the police don't believe that the evidence is real. Any cop who goes in and kicks your door down without doing it properly, with proper procedure, in other words, without a warrant, we don't trust that cop. That's a rogue cop. So he can break down your door all he wants and say, looky, looky, I found marijuana. And we're going to say, we don't believe you. Get out of here. We're not going to accept that kind of justice. Now, that's the situation we're in now, in my opinion, with Saddam Hussein and ourselves. We have basically kicked down his door. Not only did we not have a warrant, we applied for a warrant and we were told no. There is not enough evidence to support that warrant. You, America, may not kick down the door. And we went in and did it anyway. So we're like a cop who has asked for a warrant, and the judge says, we don't believe you. I don't believe you, cop. You get out of here. I do not trust you. I do not trust your evidence. You cannot have the warrant. He goes down and kicks down your house anyway, and he says, look it, I found marijuana. And the cop is going to say, wait a minute, let's have a hearing. We think maybe there's something else going on here. Did you recently have a fight with this lady? Could you be using us, the courts, to make your friend uncomfortable? Because that's an abusive process. And now you're in trouble. So the World Court is looking at America and saying, why did you come to us with no evidence and ask us to give you permission to kick down Iraq's door? Do you have any underlying motive here? Could it be you're trying to support Israel in her desire to take over the Middle East, for instance? And that little sidebar conversation could take place. But be that as it may, what I'm trying to tell you is even if they find chemical weapons at this point, the evidence is completely incredible. Because who's going to believe that anything they find at this point is other than planted? Especially in the face of the fact that in order to try to get this warrant, they presented two pieces of false evidence. One was supposed to be a report that would link up Saddam Hussein, which turned out to be plagiarized evidence, 12 years old, and another was a false report based on a purloined document with an outdated letterhead from Nigeria, in which it was supposed to be proven that Saddam Hussein had tried to get nuclear weapons from Nigeria. Two pieces of false information given to the World Court in order to get a warrant. The World Court kicked them out. Now they go in, they kick down the door. Who's going to believe it if they come up with chemical evidence? When I saw Peter Arnett say that statement, my jaw fell down. I couldn't believe that all of the things I had sort of been feeling were so beautifully articulated. As I recall, what Peter Arnett said was, Bush's expectations were incorrect when he thought the Iraqi people would embrace the Americans. He did not anticipate the resistance of the Iraqi people. And so now Bush has to go back and do a new war plan. That's what Peter Arnett said. And all of the things I'd been hearing for the last 3 or 4 days about the war suddenly fell into place. Suddenly I remembered that we'd been told it's going to be a cakewalk. They're going to lay down their arms and come out and embrace us. They're going to throw flowers in the paths like they did in Italy, where in fact the people were overjoyed to be liberated. So it's not as if we don't know that these things do happen. But this is not what happened in Iraq. We've been met with a savage resistance, and Peter Arnett honestly said Bush was so misguided in his information that he had to completely redo the war plan. Now, I don't know if that's such a big statement, but it seemed like a big statement to me just because it consolidated all of these thoughts that had been running around on my head, like, well, it's going to be a cakewalk, but why isn't it a cakewalk? Why am I not looking at what I was told I would be looking at? So I think he clearly deserves a Pulitzer Prize. And the point I'm simply making is that it shows that the inalienable right of free speech, which is God-given, is not as well recognized in the United States at this time in history as it is in Britain, because Peter Arnett, this Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, was fired from his positions with CNN, MSNBC, and National Geographic in the United States of America, but he was welcomed to go get a job at the Daily Mirror in Britain. So I'm saying Britain has a better grasp of the freedom of press than we do here in America at this time. And then, to highlight the truth of how unfair America is being to this truth-telling Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, we have Geraldo Rivera, who actually did give secrets away by drawing in the sand the location of our troops and he's still got a job. So what's going on? One thing we have certainly learned in 9/11 is that America does have enemies. Now it behooves all of us to try to figure out who is America's enemy. If some scholars come up with Israel, that should be accepted as a possibility. Instead of having insults hurled at them in the form of being called racist and anti-Semite and anti-Jew and haters. After all, when someone says that the Saudi Arabians are the enemy, nobody hurls such insults at those people. Or when people say that the Muslim religion is the problem, nobody calls them anti-Muslims or haters or bigots. That alone should tell you that we really need to investigate the problem with Israel. Because one problem we have is that we're not allowed to talk about it. And that shows you that we have to talk about it. Look at the arguments that are hurled at people who try to get the focus on Israel. You're crazy. All of the presidents have supported Israel. Israel is too small to be a danger. Nobody responds to the facts. Nobody responds to the arguments. Nobody can come up with a counter-argument to the following. We have a president who is an ex-cocaine addict, who has had a very strange religious conversion that looks to me like a schizophrenic religious reaction to coming off of drugs or possibly still being on drugs. That means we have a very controllable president. Nixon got into trouble with AIPAC for telling Billy Graham that his hands were tied by the Israelis. And other presidents have talked about how much control the Jews have over the American government. Even Ariel Sharon himself bragged about the fact that America does what Israel tells America to do. So we have fallen under the spell of our sweet little ally, who is looking more and more like an abusive spouse who's pussy-whipping her husband, the United States of America. Now, it's not insane to say that. It's intelligent. Why then do people say that that is an insane statement when it's obviously an intelligent statement? It may be a false statement, it may be wrong, but it's an intelligent statement. The only reason I can come up with for people to say that statements like this that you hear from many, many different quarters, that this is insanity, is that we've been brainwashed. And the very thing that is true is the one thing we're not allowed to consider. I believe Israel was created just exactly the way we think it was created. The world was taken in by the hysterical stories of Jews about how they'd been tortured all their lives, caused to suffer for 2,000 years, and that God would return when and if they were given Israel. I think enough fundamentalist Christians, not very bright, who went along with that program and did give these saint-like humanitarians this little section of Arabia, because that's what they asked for. Remember, or if you don't remember, let me assure you that Hitler tried to give them Madagascar to get them out of Germany, where they could have their long yearned for homeland state, but they turned it down. He then tried to arrange to export them into another area south of Russia, but they turned that down too. International Jewry insisted on having Israel. Well, the world community believed all of the hysterical stories about these sweet, humanitarian, near Christ-like creatures being crucified everywhere they went, and especially by the evil demon Hitler. So the world trusted them to move into Israel and accept this small amount of land where they could have their long-yearned-for homeland state. Even though David Ben-Gurion made it clear that he had no intention of staying on his side of the partition plan, and that this was just to be one step toward his obtaining greater Israel for his people. The first day they moved into their side of the partition plan, which, by the way, had been divided between Palestine and Israel, they broke their agreement with the United Nations and drove off 700,000 resident Palestinians. At that point, America started to talk about rescinding the partition plan and destroying Israel altogether. America realized she'd made a mistake, that these saint-like Jews were not saints at all. But the rescission did not go through, and Israel continued to live on her side of the partition plan, having driven off these 700,000 Palestinians through the use of torture and force. Then Israel took over 50% of the Palestinian side, and then they started bulldozing down the Palestinians' homes and building high-rises into which they moved Jews from all over the world, including America and Europe. Then Israel took over the Golan Heights from Syria and southern Lebanon. So you see, Israel has never been sincere about accepting anything less than all of the land from the Nile to the Euphrates. In other words, I do not believe that the United Nations or America put Israel in the middle of all these Arab states to cause trouble. I think that Israel decided long before Israel was created that she was going to cause trouble, and the rest of the world was foolish enough to believe the hysterical stories of these people who represented themselves as being Christ-like humanitarian saints. The word conspiracy seems to me to be a buzzword used by the newspeak government to tell us when we're not supposed to think about something. If you start trying to put the pieces together, they'll accuse you of being a crazy person who thinks in terms of conspiracies. But all it really means is, don't go there. We're not going to let you think about that. After all a conspiracy is a situation where two or more people agree to do something illegal or wrong. So just about everything is a conspiracy, except some crime that's committed by simply one person. It's very interesting to me that the FBI was involved at all in the 1991 attack on the World Trade Center. I just heard that today. But what is also interesting to me, and I've never talked about it before, is that the World Trade Center was bombed within 1 week of when Oklahoma City was bombed. And the modus operandi looked very much the same to me. Furthermore, the two trials were both conducted in a sort of a clandestine manner. With Oklahoma City, we had Tim McVeigh suddenly arrested and tried in a way that seems sort of secretive to me. And I never was convinced that he was the perpetrator of that massive bombing in Oklahoma City. At the same time, and running concurrently, was the trial regarding the World Trade Center, which now we're learning had a connection to a rogue element of our FBI. As a lawyer, I was able to notice that the hearings occurred on the same day, the trials occurred on the same day, within a couple of days of each other. And at the end of the trial on the World Trade Center, the lawyer came out and said, he was very, very confused, and he said, all I can say is something is controlling the situation that I have no understanding of. Now, I haven't said his words exactly right, but he just came stumbling out of the trial saying, something's in control here that I've never seen before. So what I guess I'm concluding is that there's a connection between the Oklahoma City bombing and the first World Trade Building bombing, and that we apparently now know there's a connection to a rogue element in the United States. And where do you go from there? I don't know, except just that this new World Trade Center bombing is probably connected to the same rogue element. Michael Chertoff, who is the head of Homeland Security, was in charge of the investigation. And as a matter of fact, there was no investigation into 9/11. If you noticed, all Chertoff did was send home three cells of spies and then start putting in jail everybody who pointed at what he was doing and said that there was a connection between 9/11 and Israel. just after he was appointed to investigate Homeland Security, we had that anthrax scare, and there was a media blackout, after which there was no more mention of any investigation. In other words, 9/11 went uninvestigated. One of the things that detractors will say when they can't argue intelligently against a position is that their opponent is crazy. So I took the position a long time ago that I would rather be called crazy than try to convince people I'm not. It allows you to move on in the argument. Instead of stopping and proving that you're sane, why not just give it to them and say, okay, I'll agree with that, I'm crazy. Now let's continue with the argument. And there's nothing they can say to that. They are then put in a position of having to come up with an argument, or at least an opinion, to oppose your argument or opinion. And if they can't, then they lose the argument. They can walk grumpily away and say, I proved she was crazy because she went ahead and admitted it. But they can't walk away having won the argument. And after all, isn't that what we're here to do? To persuade each other of things, build ideas? You completely lose your place in the argument when you call your opponent crazy. It's as good as admitting that you have no argument at all. Well, it's really not funny that we don't know yet who hit us in 9/11. It's really not funny that the investigation into 9/11 was derailed by the anthrax scare and never picked up again, is it? We did have a right to know who hit us in 9/11, and that investigation was squashed by the anthrax scare. Remember, Michael Chertoff was appointed to the head of Homeland Security for the sole purpose of investigating 9/11. Instead, he gave safe passage to three sets of Israeli spies and allowed them to go home to Israel without an investigation. One of those three cells was 200 strong, located in Northern California. There was another cell of Israeli spies sent back to Israel who were centered in the Midwest, and the third cell of Israeli spies were seen dancing and singing and taking pictures on the day of 9/11 at the foot of the towers. So doesn't that seem strange? Michael Chertoff, who was supposed to be the head of Homeland Security and is a Jew, derailed the investigation. So we had to have our regular journalists do the investigation, and they have done it, and you can find out a lot about it by going to www.whatreallyhappened.com, and you might be able to remember a few things. For example, it was reported on ABC News about these cells of spies that Michael Chertoff sent home. And then it was yanked from the ABC networks, but you will find it at www.whatreallyhappened.com. But in answer to the question, how could the Israelis know ahead of time about 9/11 since the hijackers surely did not advertise it? Well, I'll tell you how the Jews knew about 9/11. The Jews have a corporation located in Israel called Amdocs, which monitors every single telephone conversation of every single American with these filters that pick out words. When two words come together, the telephone conversation goes to a monitoring center, which of course is monitored by computer also. For example, if the words kill and American and president show up within the same 80 words, let's say, that whole telephone conversation gets sent to a monitor, and the monitor inspects that conversation more closely for other groups of words. Now, since the Israelis have Amdocs and are authorized to monitor every single American telephone conversation, they naturally had privy to any information that was relayed to any American or from any American or to or from anyone living in America that went to anyone else. So, of course, they knew about the attack ahead of time. Now, that's just logic. As far as fact is concerned, we know for a fact that the Israeli spies were following the Arabs. They were practically living with them. In fact, they may have been. And so, of course, they knew about it, and they even admit that they knew about it. They justify their failure to report it to the Americans in the following way. We did send you a warning, but you didn't pay any attention. And, of course, that's silly, because if you're trying to warn the President of the United States that his country is going to be attacked, you don't send him an email. You send him 20 couriers, and that they did not do. So they admit that they knew about it. They just say it's our fault for not having listened more closely to their warnings. Flight 93 was the clue that opened the window to the information that the Jews caused this whole thing. This is what happened with Flight 93. First, the Arabs took control of the airplane, if you'll recall, with box cutters. Then, we all know, the Americans said, let's take them, let's roll. Remember, we all heard that, or we heard about it on the recorder box. Now, what followed has been kept secret, but it's very important that you understand. The truth is that the Americans successfully took control of the Arab hijackers and successfully tied them up to seats and successfully untied the American pilots who had been overtaken by the hijackers. The American pilots were put back into their pilot seats, got control of the vehicle, and took the vehicle straight up into the air, vertically, very, very high, because that's how you keep yourself from crashing. You go straight up into the air, and the American pilots did that, and they did that successfully. And we know that from some transcriptions of tapes that we can play, that some people have played. The American pilots told the people on the ground, we have control of the plane. And the Americans shot it down anyway. And everybody who knows anything knows that Flight 93 was shot out of the sky by Americans. Everybody knows that. And if anybody wants to get hurl invective over that piece of information, they're so far out of the loop that there's no point in even arguing with them, because it's just well known. The question is, why did the Americans shoot that plane out of the sky? The only reason that that could happen would be if they had some reason for not wanting the plane to land safely, because it had been successfully wrested from out of the control of the hijackers. So what would be lost by letting the plane land successfully with its cargo of human Americans? There was information that the people on the plane learned that the Army did not want the American public to know. That information was that the plane was not flown by pilots. The plane was taken over by this robotic Global Hawk technology. And that was information that was considered too sensitive for the American people to know. However, I do not believe for one minute that Americans have ever had information kept from them in order to protect them from their precious feelings. I've never believed that, and I don't believe it now. The people that were being protected by having that information kept from the American people were the people who had taken over that secret technology, the actual perpetrators of the crime, the Jews. Well, I'm very aware of the dangers of torture, and I hate torture, and I think 9/11 should have been a wake-up call to put an end to torture worldwide. But our government doesn't care about torture. They're using torture as an excuse to fight a war which has no credibility. If the government cared at all about torture, they would be sitting around with the United Nations, they would have signed the covenant against torture, and they would be trying to get rid of torture. which can be done without any wars at all. If you want to put a stop to torture worldwide, what you do is you infiltrate these barbaric countries that use torture as part of the statecraft, like Syria, Israel, Lebanon, Iran, Iraq, and all of the Arabian countries. And take your video cams in with you and bust them that way. Expose them to international embarrassment. That is the way you stop torture. You just expose it. But Iraq has the least problem with torture of all of the Arab states. It's the most modernized, the most westernized of all the Arab states. So I don't believe that there's any sincerity behind our government statement that we give a damn about torture. If we did, we wouldn't be torturing people ourselves, which apparently we've been doing somewhere in the Midwest or the South. I believe we have a torture academy, and we teach people how to torture their own citizens through the use of electrocution, which is the commonest method of torture, the most efficient. And torture is a terrible thing. I hate torture. What I hate about this war is that we're using it opportunistically to get what we want instead of being sincere about recognizing the danger we are in worldwide now that weapons of mass destruction have proliferated and are in the hands of irresponsible parties. But try to tell that to Bush or his puppet masters. They could care less. What's wrong with the idea of America paying for all that medical care and America paying $100 billion for this war is that it's coming out of the pockets of the American taxpayers. The government has found an unlimited supply of money in this war. All they have to do is go to Congress and say, we need money for the war, or we need money for the medical care of the Iraqis, and Congress will vote them the money they ask for. It's called supporting the president. The problem is people stop at that point with their thinking. You have to take the next step. Who is getting that money? It doesn't just disappear into thin air. It goes into somebody's pockets. Well, it goes into the pockets of the munitions manufacturers, and it goes into the pockets of the medical establishment. The point I'm trying to make is that they have found the goose that laid the golden egg. This war allows them to just come to the American taxpayer, take as much money as they want, and then put it into their own pockets. I think torture is a bad thing. I think it should be stamped out worldwide. I think it should be confronted as a human evil. And I think it's been going on since before history. I think some cultures are worse than others. I think Western European cultures are better than Eastern cultures, and that Eastern cultures aren't as bad as African cultures and primitive Indian cultures. For example, the Aztecs, who sacrificed 30,000 people a day to their strange god. Be that as it may, torture, no matter where you find it, is wrong. And it's not being confronted properly. It needs to be confronted. Evil needs to be confronted, and torture is evil. It doesn't even do any good. You don't even get information that's reliable through torture. All it does is satisfy some creepy, barbaric instinct in humanity, and it needs to be stamped out completely. Now, I have heard the same stories everyone's heard about Saddam Hussein, but I tend not to believe those stories because I'm fully aware of what's called atrocity propaganda that accompanies every war in order to froth the people up into a bloodlust kind of a mentality, which will be sufficient to make them willing to lay down their lives. That's not easy to do. You have to brainwash people in order to get them to go and sacrifice their lives in a war. So every war is always accompanied by atrocity propaganda. And I frankly am not convinced by any of the stories I've heard about Saddam Hussein, because I'm not hearing them from anybody except propaganda sources. I haven't run into these stories in the Eastern press, the Islam press, the Jordanian press, although I will concede that Saddam Hussein probably does use torture, since all of the Arab states use torture, which is the point I'm trying to make. If you want to confront this evil, confront it on a global scale, just as you have to confront the problem of weapons of mass destruction on a global scale. That means we need to go to the United Nations and talk it over. And don't expect me to believe that the United Nations has no teeth when I'm aware that the United Nations has presented 31 resolutions, all signed by every single signatory on the Security Council, has presented these resolutions 31 times to the United Nations that would have stopped the atrocities perpetrated by the Israelis against the Palestinians. 31 times America has vetoed those resolutions. So if, as you say, if, as many people say, the United Nations has no teeth, it's because the United States refuses to cooperate with the United Nations in its genuine attempts to put an end to torture and atrocities and human rights violations. If you're at war with a state that has invaded you, as the Palestinians are with the Israelis, it's incorrect to call you terrorists. You're combatants. The Palestinians are combatants fighting an invader. So they have every right to kill anybody who's invading them that they can, with whatever means they have. And the sad thing about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is that we have armed the Israelis with enough money and material and information so that they have illegally managed to build 400 nuclear bombs. JFK tried to dismantle those bombs 3 months before he was assassinated. That's how offended America is by having been used and abused by the Israelis, by having given them money, which they were supposed to use under the Adams for Peace plan to build nuclear reactors that would create generators and would give their whole cities all the power they could possibly use. And instead, they did exactly what they were not supposed to do, which was create weapons of mass destruction in the form of these 400 nuclear warheads. They have been using bulldozers to go in against the Palestinians and steal their property. And it's very nasty what they do, because they'll provoke a little fight in the Palestinian side of the partition plan and use that as an excuse to bulldoze and level a nice area of land upon which they then build a high-rise building. And they fill it up with Jews, and they say, well, we bought it with our money, so it's ours, whether or not it's on your land. In retaliation, the Palestinians, who are basically unarmed and in the Stone Age, pick up bricks and sticks and stones and attach bombs to their own bodies and do what they can to fight back against the invader. These people are called terrorists. But in fact, they're giving their lives to defend their country against a vicious, vastly overpowering invader. I totally sympathize with these people. The Israelis don't want to settle the matter because they will not honor the partition plan. They never have, and they never will. David Ben-Gurion made it clear in private correspondence that he was tricking the international community when he accepted that small portion of the partition plan, 50%, which was given to Israel. He never intended to abide by the agreement. That's why there was a big campaign as far back as 1948 to completely rescind the partition plan and forget about Israel. They were going to just make the Jews go away. They couldn't have Israel because they would not abide by that partition plan. Any reasonable negotiation is going to have to focus on that partition plan, and the Jews are going to have to be shown, see, this is what we gave you, Israel, and this is where you're supposed to live, this part of the partition plan, not the whole partition plan, just half of the partition plan. And Israel has no intention of doing that. So Israel has invaded Palestine in a very nasty way. Israel has moved private citizens over onto the Palestinian portion of the partition plan. All of the military bases are on the Israeli side. Palestine can't get over to the military bases, and wouldn't even if she could, because she doesn't have anything with which to fight a military installation. It's bricks and stones against atomic bombs. So Palestine does what any honorable man would do if his own home were burglarized. Even if the burglar brought in his own children, the man picks up his gun and he starts to shootin' until that burglar gets out of his home. And anyone who does not understand that a man has the right to defend his home is a crook, a thief, and probably a member of the American Israeli Mafia, exactly as the representative from Iraq reported to the United Nations the day we attacked Iraq. If you'll recall, he said, this attack is being perpetrated by the American Israeli Mafia. That means crookedness, thievery, barbarianism. The feeling that you have the right to go in and be a burglar and just take over. And that is criminal in nature. And anybody who supports the Israelis' attack against the Palestinians, moving in on their property, and then squealing like stuck pigs because the Palestinians dare to take the gun off the wall and shoot their mangy asses, is a criminal at heart. As I understand it, we armed Saddam Hussein against the Iranians because we didn't like Khomeini, who was in power. Khomeini was a primitive Muslim who was chopping off the hands of women who were flirting with men, forced his women to wear burqas, and didn't allow the women to have educations. Khomeini enforced the ancient biblical law, which mandated that the state pick up stones and stone people to death for minor crimes. And we didn't like this zealot form of Muslimism. We liked Saddam Hussein, who was a modern, westernized Muslim. So we empowered him, basically, to be the guiding light for all of Arabia. We anointed Saddam Hussein in the 80s, I'm talking about the United States of America, to be the beacon of light for Western civilization, which was to spread all over Arabia. And we were happy with him. And when he fought against the Iranians, we were happy to let him win against the Iranians. Because, as I said, we didn't like Khomeini. When he went into Kuwait, we didn't care about that either. But guess who did? Israel cared very, very much. When Israel saw that we were putting Saddam Hussein in power over the entire Middle East. And Israel said, no, you cannot do that. We, Israel, must be in charge of the Middle East, America. And if you, President Bush the Elder, want to become president, you are going to do what we tell you to do. And we know that's true. We know that AIPAC pretty much controls the American government. So what happened was Israel attacked one of Iraq's silos that housed a missile that Iraq was building up so that Iraq could have some kind of a defense. Israel just sent a missile right there and bombed one of Iraq's silos. And then Israel turned around to America and said, now you got to back us up on this. We want Iraq put out of business. We want the business. So we convinced the United Nations through two pieces of false evidence to go in and attack Iraq, and we did, and we put him down. And Iraq has never really been a strong country ever since, in spite of everything you're told about what a great threat it is. Iraq is no threat. The problem is that Israel wants to control the Middle East, and now Israel is moving in for the kill. Just because we were hit at 9/11 would have been the time, if we had a rational president, to actually create some national security for ourselves. The borders should have been sealed. People should have started being questioned about their loyalties. Dual citizenship people should have been interrogated, especially those with dual citizenship between Israel and America, but also the Arabs and everybody else. We should have gotten rid of all of the unstable and disloyal elements in America. But instead, we just continued to keep the borders open, letting the infrastructure go to hell, cut off all of the veterans' benefits, taking school lunches away from the kids, and are spending $100 billion to turn Iraq over to Israel. Well, I believe in God, and I think God will prevail in this struggle. And I don't think the last chapter of the story is going to be when and if America takes Baghdad. That won't be the end. We may show the world just how evil we are. We may demonstrate that the Iraqi representative was entirely correct when he reported to the United Nations that Iraq was being attacked by the American-Israeli mafia. Everyone knows the mafia can kill people, and prayers to God don't stop those murders, because people do have free will. But if there is a God, and I think there is, and for the sake of argument, let's just say if there's such a thing as reality, the human race is going to react to this inhuman attack on the part of the American-Israeli mafia. The world is not going. The world is being given a choice right now. They're watching the American-Israeli mafia attack Iraq for financial gain. And every state in the world is saying, well, let's see, we've got the mafia has taken over the neighborhood. Should I join the mafia and get part of the spoils of these crimes, or shall I stand up to the mafia? And believers in God believe that the good people will prevail over the bad people, as I do. If I'm right, if good will triumph over evil in this huge struggle, the world is not going to allow and condone this mafia attack on an innocent country. How the world will react, I do not know. That's like saying, how does God act? Offhand, what I think will happen is that, yes, we will get our victory, we will get our oil, we will get our water, and we'll give it all to our partner in crime, Israel, and that crime will take place. But in reaction, what will happen is that all good people will stop seeing us as a country that should be supported. Once the perception of the world changes and we are seen as a rogue terrorist state, people will feel morally driven to retaliate against us. And all of the goodwill of the human race will be taken away from the United States, and we will find terrorism in our own country rampant, because all of these Muslims and all of these sympathizers who don't like being part of the mafia will consider themselves noble and good to steal from the system. And the theft will begin, and it will begin on all sides everywhere. That's what happens when consciousness changes like that. People stop being good and start being bad, because good and evil has suddenly changed. Once America becomes bad in the eyes of the world, she becomes a target for all manner of crime, because people will see that as a noble thing to do. Hurting America will become a moral imperative, and that we will not survive. Thank you very much for listening tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I'll see you next Tuesday night. Same time, same station.